The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
Hello, everybody. Hour number two. Come on back in. Welcome on this Monday, the 31st day of January 2022. Hope your weekend was fantastic. Mine was. All good. Enjoyed the nice warm temperatures. Got a good snoot full of those because here comes, I don't think we're doing single digits. There was one moment, I think on Saturday afternoon, where my phone told me it would be 9 degrees on like Friday or Saturday morning or something. And it has now softened that up a little bit to a far more toasty 12 or 13 degrees. But a couple of things. Obviously, you know, Trump and his rally in Conroe. Russians still on the border of Ukraine. What we want to do about all those things, in fact, plenty of Texas politics to immerse ourselves into because the primary is 1 month from tomorrow. So that's pretty exciting. And Ken Paxton will be with us 8:35 in the attorney general's race. We had Louis Gohmert on Friday. It was feeling quite flattered at the negative attention from Ken. We'll ask Ken about that at 8:35 because that's what we do. We work our way through these races and ask people things about things. So that'll be at the bottom of this hour. For right now, things I brought up, things you want to bring up, 866-660-5759, 866-660-5759. Amid all of this, I mentioned at the beginning of the show an hour ago that all of this is very front of mind now in terms of getting to the store, getting everything we need. Today it's going to be just about 70. Tomorrow it's going to be knocking on the door of 70. And then the bottom just drops out, which means that, and this is funny because local TV is having an incredible time this week because they know that everybody is glomming to them for every weather update you can possibly imagine, which you should. But I mean, this is like Delkus in his element, and everybody else working at every station as the and everybody is saying the models may change, the forecasts may change. You know, right now it looks like Thursday. You know, late Wednesday, early Thursday looks at the possibility of an inch or two of snow, maybe more. The further northwest you go, the more likelihood of snow, you know, from Denton down into, to, you know, Maine, DFW, Dallas County, Terrace County, Tarrant County, more of a ice and snow mix. And then as you move to the southeast, more of a sleet kind of thing. But that's what they say this morning. Could that all change? Sure it is. And our memories snap back to roughly 1 year ago, so it was the middle of February, right? When we dipped down at or below zero and our pipes started to burst and our grid failed and all of a sudden we were all living in Venezuela. We were all, I mean, either the power was on and off for 5 days. For the better part of a week, we had power that was on for about an hour and then off for about an hour and then on for about an hour and then off for about an hour. And you heard not one peep of complaint from me because I knew people whose power went off and stayed off for the better part of a week. There was a death toll to this. And we found ourselves learning things about the grid that we never knew before, that we never bothered to know before. It's like, where does the water come from? We don't know. We don't think about it. We turn the spigot. It comes out. If it ever didn't, it's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? We turn on the lights. We turn on the heat. And these things just come on until they don't. And then we are very, very consumed with why that did not happen. So anyway, I think about morning television and bless these folks' hearts because 3 days from now, hope they got about seven pairs of long johns. And I'm sure one of them will be one of the hardest working men in show business, Channel 5's Larry Collins, who on a thoroughly balmy morning like today is they've got him out deployed somewhere talking about the grid.
There's a lot that we have to pay attention to the next few days. We're looking at days of sub-freezing temperatures, also the possibility of snow, freezing rain. So for anyone who lived through February of 2021, it is a fair question to ask, is the state's power grid ready? Here's what we know. Already, ERCOT predicts high demand for electricity over the next few days during this cold snap, possibly record high demand. The projection obtained by our partners over at the Dallas Morning News shows demand hitting nearly 73 gigawatts this coming Friday. I want to give you some perspective. That's just 4 gigawatts short of the peak demand that we saw during last year's winter storm. Now, ERCOT has issued an operating condition notice for extreme cold weather forecast through Wednesday through Friday. And the agency says it is coordinating with power companies and state emergency managers to avoid any problems. The other big thing we have to look at are the roadways. What's being done to prepare for the possibility of all that cold weather? Well, coming up in the next half hour, we'll check in with TxDOT to find out what they are doing to get the roads ready.
All right. And obviously that involves the treatment of some roads, which, you know, if you do it too late, that's never good, obviously. If you do it too early, then it becomes ineffective. So I'm probably thinking, you know, overnight between Tuesday and Wednesday and early Wednesday as they bear down on what's likely to happen. So ERCOT, the Electric Reliability, keyword there, Council of Texas, they just caught holy you-know-what all last year because we all found it ridiculous that we live in the most energy-rich state in the contiguous United States and we ran and our power didn't work. And now listen, and I know this is a possibly once-in-a-lifetime cold snap, but still. It's America in 2021, or it was last year. Now it's America in 2022. And we've had a year of learning lessons about the grid and cold-proofing the grid as best we can and making things better. The interim ERCOT CEO, because they went through that place with a broom, is a gentleman named Brad Jones, who says the Texas electric grid is more prepared for winter operations than ever before. Okay, where's that bar set? Because we obviously weren't ready for winter operations last year, were we? That's like saying the Cowboys are ready for the playoffs better than a long time. Great. Well, that doesn't mean you're as ready as you should be. Clumsy comparison, I know. Pardon me. But so I don't expect anything crazy bad to happen. Of course, I didn't expect anything crazy bad to happen last year either. And then last word on this. Who else has something on this? Oh, William Joy at Channel 8 had a grid piece. Listen, we're neck deep in the grid. Let's do this. The politicization of the grid. I've said for a long time that Governor Abbott, who seems to have a primary victory at hand coming up here a month from tomorrow, is, however, one grid failure away from some type of vulnerability. Because fairly or not, when you and your party are in charge, if something bad happens, all of a sudden they blame you. As I said, in terms of whose quote-unquote fault was it politically, I didn't find it anybody's fault politically last year's grid failure. Because as I said, was there some grid-repairing, grid-saving idea that the Democrats always had that the Republicans waved off? Oh, you silly Democrats, we're not going to do that. And then the grid fails. It's like, oh, you should have done what we were telling you to do. No, there was no such thing. It was just one of those things that happened. And we all learned from it, but it was obviously a Republican-run state, and it was our job, Republicans' job, Abbott's job, to learn from it and make it better. And so has that happened? If we are able to slide through a cold winter blackout-free, then that'll be a good thing. If things get crazy, and if we have another grid failure this storm or next storm, does that mean like Abbott loses in the primary? No. But it makes things interesting. All right, let's see here. Channel 8 last night, William Joy and his bit of grid journalism.
Partial answer to that question this week. I mean, as you guys talked about, the weather is totally different. Right now, it's cooled off a little bit in the last couple hours. But earlier today, if you were outside, even a light sweater probably would have felt like too much. So it might be tough to believe right now. But this week will be the toughest test in our grid since last year's storm. In classic Texas fashion, a 70-degree weekend is going to transition to temperatures in the teens by week's end.
1 to 10 scale, what's your level of confidence the lights stay on in Texas this week?
I'm feeling like probably 7 or 8. Or
what? I mean, okay, maybe that's a good answer. Oh, 7 or 8. Okay.
Something like that.
Doug Lewin is a consultant heading Stoic Energy in Austin. The biggest reason he's confident is the weather. The freeze expected this week won't cover all of Texas, be as cold, or last as long.
If you were telling me that, my confidence would be at like a 1 or a 2, because we have not done enough to stop outages in an exact repeat, but this is not an exact repeat.
Oh, we're very ready.
Interim ERCOT CEO Brad Jones was in Dallas this week for a conference and says power plants have reached new standards.
They've improved their weatherization, made sure that they had more insulation on their equipment.
But okay, great, which I want to believe, and I do believe I have a reason to worry. But, and again, consultant. Consultant is like constitutional attorney or economist. It's a meaningless term in and of itself. It depends on what you bring to the table. It depends on what axes you have to grind, what ideology you have, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, and yeah, not throwing shade at the consultant guy that they were quoting a few minutes ago, but it's like what that guy said, that if this were another storm like last year, you know, where we were in a week of near zero temperatures, his confidence in the grid staying secure would be like 1 or a 2.
And we've gone out and inspected them to make sure they've done that.
But it's natural gas providers, not power plants, that worry Lewin, because neither lawmakers nor the Railroad Commission forced them to change.
There are no winterization rules in place. There is no standard out there. So we have seen freezing cause reductions in gas supply.
And it does concern me. It shows that we still need more work to be done on the weatherization of our natural gas fleet.
Before last year, statewide demand had never passed 67 gigawatts. This week, ERCOT is projecting 73 at 8 a.m. Friday.
Now, last year, the demand, as you remember from the earlier story, was 77.
That is really interesting that there would be like 0 years where we get above 70 in the winter, and then there's 2 years in a row where we get above 70.
This isn't last year, but it will be a test of what's working.
Nobody should panic, but everybody should be prepared.
Okay. All right. Well, I am not panicking, and I am prepared. There you go. All right. 866-660-5759. Your thoughts on these matters and various other things clicking around in the news. Got a few other things to offer up to you. In fact, amid the free speech battles of today, Joe Rogan, his own self, has had a little something to say, as all these artists from Neil Young to Joni Mitchell say it's him or us. Spotify already told Neil Young to take a hike. A lot of people are fearful that Spotify is going to buckle and dump Joe Rogan. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. I don't think they're going to do it. But Rogan himself had a thing or two to say about what's been happening and what he thinks is at play here and how ridiculous it all is. Worth a listen. Next, Mark Davis, 822. A little Santana for your Monday. Enjoy today's warm temperatures. Ha, ha, ha. All righty. So amid all of this, he's the most talked about man in show business for the last few days, as all these, you know, aging rockers are yanking out of Spotify if they don't sack Joe Rogan. And it appears they're not going to do that. Joe, like, went out of his yard and did a little selfie video evaluating what he thinks is going on.
I think there's a lot of people that have a distorted perception of what I do, maybe based on sound bites or based on headlines of articles that are disparaging. The podcast has been accused of spreading dangerous misinformation. specifically about two episodes, a little bit about some other ones, but specifically about two. One with Dr. Peter McCullough and one with Dr. Robert Malone. Dr. Peter McCullough is a cardiologist, and he is the most published physician in his field in history. Dr. Robert Malone owns 9 patents on the creation of mRNA vaccine technology and is at least partially responsible for the creation of the technology that led to mRNA vaccines. Both these people are very highly credentialed, very intelligent, very accomplished people, and they have an opinion that's different from the mainstream narrative. I wanted to hear what their opinion is. I had them on, and because of that, those episodes in particular, those episodes were labeled as being dangerous. They had dangerous misinformation in them. The problem I have with the term misinformation, especially today, is that many of the things that we thought of as misinformation just a short while ago are now accepted as fact. Like, for instance, 8 months ago, if you said, if you get vaccinated, you can still catch COVID and you can still spread COVID, you would be removed from social media. They would ban you from certain platforms. Now, that's accepted as fact. If you said, I don't think cloth masks work, you would be banned from social media. Now, that's openly and repeatedly stated on CNN. If you said, I think it's possible that COVID-19 came from a lab, you'd be banned from many social media platforms. Now, that's on the cover of Newsweek. All of those theories that at one point in time were banned were openly discussed by those two men that I had on my podcast that have been accused of dangerous misinformation.
There you go. There's Rogan. And this is why I've been talking about this for weeks. It's a useless term. What even is misinformation? What even is it? Let everybody out there. Now McCullough and Malone may or may not be my favorite go-to guys, but that's not what it's about. It's about let people say what they want to say and let us all be grown-ups and judge for ourselves. That's what a grown-up, mature society, it's what an enlightened society does. All righty. Attorney General Ken Paxton talks about things he's been up to at the border, how that race is going, et cetera, et cetera. He joins us next. Gordon Griffin is in the newsroom. Mark Davis, 831. It is Monday, 31st of January. Glad you're here as we kick off the week together. Tomorrow is the 1st of February and T-minus 1 month to the primary. All kinds of races in progress. Among the hotter ones is the Attorney General's race. Joining us, the incumbent AG Ken Paxton. Welcome, sir. Happy Monday. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
I am fantastic. Thanks for being here. What's up since last time we spoke? I understand you are fresh back from the border. What was that trip about?
Yeah, so a couple of things. One is I wanted to provide an opportunity for other Republican AGs to see what's going on at the border. You just can't get it unless you're down there. So we set up a trip. We had 12 Republican Attorney Generals plus Matt Whitaker, who used to be the United States Attorney General of the United States. And we basically gave them a view through law enforcement, through our own briefings about what was going on. Oddly enough, we'd set this up over a month ago, and the feds, Border Patrol, who we love working with, and Customs and Enforcement and ICE all backed out the night before, wouldn't give briefings to our people. They were told by the Washington people not to talk to us.
Okay. Why, he asks, as if he doesn't know the reason, but let's get your answer first.
Well, they gave us no reason. Clearly, they don't want us to know what's going on at the border. The reality is we actually showed up anyway at Customs and Immigration. We showed up at a point of entry, and we got a tour anyway. But, you know, it's just interesting that the Biden administration would cancel literally 7 o'clock the night before by email, give no explanation, and tell their local people to stand down and not provide any information to us.
I mean, the optics, I try to understand and divine why people do what they do. If you are the federal government and you have a bunch of Republican attorneys general gathering to examine some border problems, it's obviously going to blow back on the Biden administration. Customs and, you know, Border Protection, ICE, these are all part of the Biden administration now. And they didn't want their people essentially handing you guys a political bat to beat Biden's brains in.
Well, I think that's probably true. But They should have said from the beginning they weren't going to meet with us instead of having us already down there. I mean, all these people flew in. They took 2 days of their lives to make a trip down to the border. And, you know, if you don't want to talk to us, just tell us ahead of time. Don't tell us, you know, 12 hours before we're supposed to meet.
So you have a lot of attorneys general, and obviously you think of a border state, you think of Texas, you think of Arizona, think of California, but there's a saying that I'm really starting to enjoy lately, and that is with the Biden administration, you know, loading people onto planes and buses and diffusing them out into the hinterlands, every state is a border state.
Yeah, it's true, and I think the Republican attorney general got to see that. One of my friends, Sean Reyes from Utah, is attorney general there. He kind of coined that phrase, and I think it's really accurate because the fentanyl trade doesn't stop at Texas. It ends up all over the country. It's the reason that 30% increase in drug overdoses this year. The fact that they're spreading COVID all over the country doesn't stop at the border of Texas. It goes wherever they send these people in the middle of the night. So every bit of crime, every negative consequence, the cost of this is being exported around the country really quickly.
Attorney General Ken Paxton is with us, and it seems like every few days Fox News has fresh footage of busloads of people, sometimes at the border, sometimes plane loads of people taken all the way as far away as New York, where the Biden administration just spiriting them into some form of transportation in order to deposit them elsewhere in the country so that they can get these air quotes court dates for which they'll never show up in many cases so they can be normalized, legalized, and eventually vote forever as grateful Democrats. I mean, that is the Biden border policy. What can we do? What is there anything we can do about policing this, about stopping it, about saying, wait a minute, who's on that bus? What's going on? Where are you people going?
No, as far as that, we've tried. Abbott actually tried to put that in place, and we got sued over it, got an injunction stopping us. He was actually trying to get it so that if these people were law enforcement, we wouldn't stop you. But if they were not with law enforcement, if anybody else was transporting them, we would stop you. But the Biden administration sued us, and right now we have an injunction. We did, however, if you'll remember, win all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court on the Remain in Mexico program. And while we were down on the border, we filed another one called the Central American Minors Program, which was created under the Obama administration. Trump ended it. And what that does is it allows these people from these Central American countries, three of them, to come into the country. If they claim asylum, that's all they have to do is they claim asylum. Under the Remain in Mexico program, they're supposed to be sent back. We're not doing that still, even with court orders. But then they allow them to basically have their children and other caregivers flown to the United States on our dollar, and then they're in the country illegally. And this is completely made up, so we sued them over that. And we're going to have to go back and somehow figure out how to enforce a court order and federal law as it relates to the Remain in Mexico program.
Speaking of court battles and tugs of war, see if this sounds like a familiar song. In Virginia, brand new Governor Glenn Youngkin looks at his school districts in his state and says, guess what? We're not going to have a mask mandate. Liberal school districts in Arlington, Virginia, and elsewhere flip him the bird and say, guess what? We're having mandates anyway. Sound familiar? That's exactly what happened in Texas. Where does that stand right now? Because your position, Governor Abbott's position, is that what is the law that gives him it was the Emergency Powers Act that gives him the authority to say no to mask mandates. Houston, you know, in Harris County, Dallas County, El Paso, Travis County, they said, screw you, we're doing mask mandates anyway. Where does that stand right now?
So, as you know, we had our federal lawsuits. We won the OSHA one. We have other lawsuits going against the feds. But we've actually had lawsuits going longer against the school districts and other governmental entities because under the Disaster Relief Act, the governor issued an executive order saying you can't require masks at school. Well, so we're in various stages. We have probably, I don't know, 20 of these lawsuits going, working their way up to the Texas Supreme Court. So we've had different results in certain liberal counties. We haven't been as successful in more conservative counties. We've been successful. They just have to work their way up to the Texas Supreme Court. I wish we could do it in like a week, but it's not the way it is. It just takes time to move up through the process. In the end, I don't see how we lose.
Within a month, or will it take into the summertime? What do you? I mean, it's hard to tell.
I wish the Supreme Court would take the case right now, but I don't control the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. I just have to wait till they say, they're ready to hear our case.
Gotcha. Attorney General Ken Paxton's here. Okay, now the fun begins. Let's hop into the primary race. Had Louis Gohmert on Friday. He's feeling a certain attention from y'all's campaign. These demonic pictures of Louis. He misses votes, blah, blah, blah. This is what makes people crazy about primary politics. Why the hostility toward Louis?
No, I'm just, it's not really hostility. It's just he's got a voting record. All we did was highlight the fact that he missed over 800 votes. We highlighted that he voted against gun rights and some other issues. So, I mean, it's his record. All he needs to do is just say exactly why he missed so many votes and why he voted for things that were more aligned with Beto O'Rourke than the Republican primary voter.
Here's what makes me crazy. If it's 2 years ago, you and I and Louis are in a room and there's so much love and this is the primary season, I know. And that's why he's got to nitpick you to death. You got to nitpick him to death. You know, he's an awesome congressman. You just think you'd be a better attorney general. Why not leave it at that?
Well, so, I mean, I'm not the one that started this attack. I mean, when Louis goes around, he's pretty negative. He doesn't talk about what necessarily he's going to do different than what I've done. He makes it very personal, and he's been attacking me from day one. All I've done, and I don't do anything personal. I don't attack him personally. All I've done is highlight a voting record, which I think is fair game in a Republican primary. This was how I ran the first time. Dan Branch and I had been in the Texas House from the very first day we started together. And what I told people is listen to the record, not the rhetoric, because the rhetoric sounds like Dan Branch is me. And the rhetoric of these people running against me sounds like they would be me, but their record doesn't demonstrate that. And so all I'm trying to do is highlight the fact that they can talk the game, but go back and look at their record and then make your decision. If you like that record, then vote for them. If you like my record, then vote for me instead of making it personal, which is what Louis is all about. He doesn't talk about my record. He doesn't talk about his record. He talks about, you know, other things.
Well, I was going to say, yes, he does. Let's take our latest march through those things. Once again, for those who, because I always know that a lot of people are hearing us talk about this maybe for the first time. So Louis's big thing, George P.'s big thing, Ava Guzman's big thing, are these eight attorneys who all of a sudden went deeply, sharply south on you. Terrible things are happening. We got to go. And to them, those folks are heroic truth tellers. To you, they are disgruntled ex-employees. What's up with these departed people?
All anybody has to do, of course, Louis wouldn't have done this, nor would any of these other opponents, read the report that we put out. When we put this report out, I didn't know what had happened in my office. I didn't know what these guys, what their agenda was. I didn't know why they did it. They didn't explain it to me. They didn't come to me ahead of time and say, you did this, you did that. So I asked my team of lawyers, there were probably 15 of them involved. I said, look, I want you to go find the truth. I want you to, one, I'm not going to write a word of it. We're going to document everything, so don't put anything in this report that you can't document by the law, with an email, with notes, something that we can go back and say, here's what happened. Well, so we did that report with documentation. It's about 260 pages. It's actually only about 69 pages of writing. No one's ever disputed that report, and that report, it basically indicts these guys for committing crimes and doing things that were illegal, and of course, no one talks about that in the media. No one's really read that report. And so it just all the facts are laid out and no one's ever disputed them.
I did read it and I found it interesting. And I guess it was Ava Guzman who said, how in the world were you a bad judge of character to bring these people in the first place to all of a sudden have them turn out to be such scoundrels?
Well, so really it was, you know, this is, you know, I don't end up hiring everybody. I hired one person that basically worked 2 years to bring in the people he wanted in there that would do what he wanted to do. I didn't know he was doing this stuff. He was very secretive about it. He learned from me, I think, how to build coalitions. And what he did was he moved people into positions that would do what he wanted done with me. So I'm pretty convinced that he worked on it for 2 years. There were other people involved outside the office. And so, you know, is it unusual for things like this to happen in government and in a big bureaucracy? I mean, we do have it's no different in Texas than it is in Washington. You can see what happened to Donald Trump with the bureaucracy and the deep state. Same thing happens here.
Are people correct in saying that some of the attention you're showing Louis means that you consider him to be kind of that's where there's the most shared space. His fan base and your fan base, a lot of overlap, which is why you're going after him more than, say, George P. or Eva Guzman.
Yeah, the only place that we've actually done anything related to Louis is out in his district.
Well, yeah.
I don't feel like people know in his district. He's never advertised his record. And all I'm doing across the rest of the state, he's not that well known. He's not doing very well. So the only place that he has a strength, and it's only about 5% of the state, is in his district. So all we're trying to do is highlight. And if the voters like his voting record, then they should vote for him. All I'm doing is laying out, here's how he voted on these issues. And I would have voted differently. And here's how many votes he's missed over, his career. It seems like a lot of votes to me. Maybe people don't care about them. If they don't, then they should make their choice.
Here, a month and a day out, is it still your expectation to prevail without a runoff?
It's my hope, for sure. You never know how it's going to turn out, but the numbers look good for me. Obviously, we've got the Trump endorsement, and the more we talk about what I've done and then inform people that I have that endorsement, our fundraising has been fantastic, the best it's ever been. And, right now, it looks good, but if it ends up being that we have a runoff, I've been through several runoffs with people like George and done very well, usually 1-2-1. So I'm not afraid of a runoff. It's just more money that we could be spending in a November election. That's kind of the difficult part of this, is you end up spending all your money in a primary, and then it makes it easier for the Democrats to win.
Is it, last thing, that's what everybody always says, is that you're going to be such damaged goods, we're going to wind up with a Democrat attorney general, to which you would say what?
That's just made up. It's fanciful on their part. I have as good a chance of winning with Biden in office, given the fact that I've taken him on and he's going to be very unpopular. And they say that, I did better than Ted Cruz last time. I spent, I think, $8 million last time against a Democrat who spent $7 million. As an example, I think Abbott had like $70 million and his opponent had zero. Dan Patrick spent $20 million and his opponent had zero. So I had a competitive race as far as money. So I would not be surprised, no matter who the AG is, because we don't typically raise as much money as the two higher offices. It's an easier place to go try to win because the money hasn't always been there. So would I expect this to be a targeted race no matter what? Yes. But are we going to win this state? I totally believe that because of Joe Biden and just the history of the party being out of power, does pretty well during these off-year elections. I think these guys, this is the only thing they have, is this made-up idea of speculation about what's going to happen to me in a race, a year from now, when history doesn't indicate that's really what's going to happen.
Twitter feed is @KenPaxtonTX. The website is KenPaxton.com. Always a pleasure, sir. Appreciate it. And safe travels on the campaign trail. And I know we'll be talking soon.
Thanks, Mark. Have a great week.
I will. That's Attorney General Ken Paxton, 852. Okay, let's say you're out in Tyler, Longview, or probably further out, more toward Longview, up in the northeastern corner of the state. Louis Gohmert's district, you've loved Louis forever as a Republican, and you get this mailer that Louis is basically the Antichrist. Like, wait a minute, what? And I'm being hyperbolic, but it's basically Louis missed all these votes and blah, blah, blah. And we had Louis on Friday, and his whole point was that, listen, there's some things that are procedural, and not everybody makes every vote, and look at my whole record, please, et cetera, et cetera. This is just nitpicking, which it is. And that's what Louis's doing to Ken, because when somebody's record is pretty darn great, Ken Paxton has done some wonderful things as attorney general. So everybody running against him has got to find other stuff. Louis has been a fantastic congressman, so Ken's got to find other stuff. And I'm just going to tell you, for every voter who gets that mailer and goes, well, maybe Louis is not the cat's pajamas, there may be two voters who say, what is this about? I love Louis. Makes them actually think less of Ken for sending that garbage out. This is why handlers make me crazy. 866-660-5759. Into the 9 o'clock hour, my thoughts, your calls, intermingled. It's going to be awesome. Bread, milk, toilet paper, bread, milk, toilet paper. You got like 2-3 days. Back in a moment.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.